Snohomish County Executive Dave Summers asked a bunch of us to be part of a roundtable. He wanted to gather religious leaders from various traditions to come and sit with him on occasion, and the truth is others have been much more faithful about that than I have. But I sure want to commend that impulse to get folks together who otherwise would have no other reason to do so. The times that I've sat around that table in the county building in that big conference room way up on one of the top floors, I look around the circle and I see faces that are similar to mine. But I see even more faces that are unlike mine. There are Sikhs and Unitarians, Jews and evangelicals, there are Mormons and Muslims and mainliners. We're all on a distribution list together, one that he keeps. On Friday afternoon, and then on into the evening, my email box just started to balloon. Names there that I recognized and names there that I didn't. But the first one that popped up was Rachel. Rachel, Rabbi Rachel Court, right here from Temple Beth Or. She used that word, that very old word, that old, old Hebrew word that may have even existed before that language. You know what word she used? Shalom. She said shalom to all of us. And then she went on to speak of her congregation's heartbreak, her congregation's revulsion and determination in the face of a murderous assault on Muslim worshipers in New Zealand. People who had been singled out because of their faith, because of their ethnicity, because of their identity. Luke is our evangelist. Luke, the ancient gospel writer, the masterful storyteller and narrator of the story of Jesus of Nazareth, he's been at work, right, through these chapters that we've read and shared together in this room. Luke is good at it because his narrative moves us from place to place. In fact, we've been there at the birth, and now we're here with Jesus in adulthood. We've been there with Jesus in his mother's arms while she sings these Magnificat lullabies, and all the way through now to the blistering debates that he's had with the religious elites. Luke's pretty good. He moves us from those moments when Jesus is there on the beach with all of his fishing buddies and all the comforts of home to what? To now. Now, through the desiccated wilderness, eyeball to eyeball with Satan himself. Luke uses geography to move the narrative forward. Jesus has been at home, but now Jesus is headed to another place. In fact, Luke says that he turns his face to where? Do you remember? To that city, to Jerusalem. Jerusalem. There's no gift shop and there's no tour bus and there's no waiter to bring you something cool to drink. No, that Jerusalem kills the prophets and stops movements and puts down uprisings. Even without social media, no email, no Twitter, no Facebook feed, Jesus could hear the whispers. Because the world was traveling fast, even in that time, the kind of darting eyes back and forth and the crane next to see who might be listening and watching. You could feel the hum and the buzz and the murmur. It was urgent. It was emphatic and it was chilling. In fact, finally, they just come right up. They walk up to Jesus and they get in his face. And do you remember what they say? Get away from here. Why? Herod's trying to kill you. Oh. You know, oh my. It's worth remembering that this is not the first time a Herod has been a threat to God's purpose. It's not the first time. After all, there's been another Herod, an earlier Herod, a cunning and diabolical Herod that attempted to seduce and trick those magi. Do you remember them? Remember, he says to them, "Return and bring me word of where this newborn Messiah is, so that I too may bring him tribute." Well, they weren't buying it. After all, the Magi were wise. They saw through the lies. They saw through the charm and the manipulation. So where do they go? Yep, they go home by a different way. "Get away from here, Jesus. Herod is trying to kill you." I've never had to deal with a death threat. I mean, at least anything like a serious one. I wonder, though, there may be some in this room who have. What would you do? What would you say? I probably watched way too many TV shows growing up. I have visions in my head of heroes and tough guys, quiet and strong and noble and violent. "Get away from here, Jesus. Herod is trying to kill you." I can see John Wayne with his thumbs in his gun belt. "Well, let's saddle up." Right? Isn't that what he would say? Or Clint Eastwood. "Come on, punk, make my..." See, you have these same images in your head. I mean, you can go anywhere on the dial. You'll see any number of Hollywood leading men with phrases like "lock and load" or more crass, vulgar ways to show some nerve, right? But Luke's Jesus has now grown up. And whatever childish naivete, whatever adolescent daydreams, well, all those now have given way to some hard, cold, and imminent realities. Because Jesus has a target on his back. His public behavior has made him conspicuous and vulnerable to those with power, made him conspicuous and vulnerable to those who have something to lose. He's been challenging the system. This Jesus has been advocating for the marginalized. He's been demonstrating the love of God, not for the insiders, but for the outsiders. Things have escalated, and now the boss wants him dead. "Get away from here, Jesus. Herod is going to kill you." What do you say to that? Luke's Jesus puts it this way: "Go and tell that fox for me, 'Listen, I am casting out demons and performing cures today and tomorrow, and on the third day, I finish my work.'" And he goes on, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills prophets and stones those who are sent to it, how often I have desired to gather your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing." Have you ever been called a chicken? Chicken. It feels like I dare you, right? Come on, let's go, chicken. When I call someone chicken, I mean to insult them. When I call someone chicken, I mean to demean them, to be mean to them, and imply that they are weak and frightened and unreliable, to say that they are lacking in spine and resolve. But is that what Luke's Jesus has in mind here? Or is there something more? If the fox, Herod, that fox, is cunning and ruthless, if that Herod is opportunistic and feckless and duplicitous, then surely a mother hen is no match. Let's see, fox versus chicken? No contest. Unless, of course, it's not about the chicken winning the fight. Maybe there's something else at stake. What if the point is the brood, is the chicks? In this metaphor of radical vulnerability, the mother hen does the only thing she can do. She does the thing that the only way to save her little ones, the only way to turn things around. So she turns and she faces that ugly carnivore. She moves in front of the chicks and stretches those wings. And then when it's over, the fox is satiated, a belly full of what it thought would be the end of it. The bird is dead. But what? Those babies live to love. Those babies live. They live to work and serve. Those babies, they live. They live to praise and believe. Jesus would save them. Jesus would save us. And here's the thing that's hard to live with, that Jesus would save the fox too, would save the fox from itself. So thank you, Rabbi Rachel. Thank you for your shalom. Your shalom for Muslims and evangelicals. Your shalom for Jews and Mormons and Lutherans and Catholics, for Sikhs and Buddhists. Thank you, Rachel. Thank you, Rachel, for your shalom, for all those who would face the fox and know the love of the one with wings wide enough for us all. Amen.